Welcome to Wild and Awake, an online retreat where you deepen your consciousness, arouse your courage, and choose with wisdom. We are exploring the question, how do I live my best life right now? I am your host, Kari Vantine.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Wild and Awake. Today we have with us Sasha Sterling. Welcome, Sasha.
Hi there. Thank you, Kari, for having me. Hi there. Hi, you watching this.
Hi, everybody. Yes. I am absolutely thrilled to have Sasha with us today. Sasha is a natural investigator. For the last 20 years, she has poured her energy and focus into the exploration of human consciousness, emotional and relational innovation, and most of all, love in action. She is, among many things, a master empowerment coach, serial entrepreneur, a woman's advocate, a mother, a daughter, a sister, and a friend. Sasha's favorite thing is to dive deep into an experience in real time with like-hearted people, self-actualization, self-expression, the wisdom of emotions, spiritual awakening, and the power of intimacy and authentic human connection. She is the co-creator of the Bee Sisterhood and her recently launched podcast, which is truly beautiful vision, exploring all things, all that is sacred. And I would like to just say from my personal experience, Sasha, I've known you for 7 years when I first joined a business community of which you were part of. And over these years, I've seen your evolution. You've been on my radar as this heart-driven businesswoman, and you have worked, I've watched you work, balancing relationships, personal visions, your many, many, many roles for living a full life. I have watched your business evolve. I've sat in groups with you, I've taken classes with you, and I've also worked with you as my business coach and mentor. And so in all of those different ways, I'm just wanting to recognize and acknowledge both you being here, but for the audience watching us, one of the things that's often spoken of is the many different ways we're in relatedness with each other, right? And the many pieces of wisdom that come out of that relatedness. So I'm hoping that you'll be able to see some of that transparency in our conversation today, and that that may also inform you in your relationships, which I believe are really core in how we learn to walk on this earth together. And Sasha, today, some of what I'd like to really explore with you is this wisdom you offer as a woman on personal growth and commitment to others. And I see you as a role model, not just in as a businesswoman, which is one of the big fronts that I've seen you in, but as a woman who's really consciously working how to live a life that works. And it's not necessarily simple as a woman who wears so many hats. So I'm curious, if we could just start off, I'd like to start right there with you as a woman who's wearing many hats and many roles. And this path that you're taking has become more and more a path of consciousness. I've seen you as a businesswoman and you're unfolding and unfolding. What's been leading or guiding you? Like why has your life become more and more one about spirituality and consciousness? What's been the angel knocking at the door? Maybe not one thing, but just let us behind the veil of what's happened that and this transformation of Sasha.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kari, so much. And yeah, it's been such a privilege to be in relationship with you in different ways and, you know, and the continuing to see each other's work evolve and change, and also the through threads, the consistency, you know, of certain core values and messages really threading throughout. And I'd say for myself, spirituality and empowerment have been with me since the very beginning, before I have memory. Family tells me stories about myself. And so there's this innate, you know, I believe that we each have like an innate calling that's right there. Sometimes it's hard to see it, but then looking backwards, we can connect the dots backwards. And so my relationship with my power is very much my relationship with spirituality. And remembering and forgetting and having epiphanies and then doubting and then looking at how to integrate the mystical and the mundane. So I would say that really is my ongoing journey. And I love that you you talked about, beeps are going on. And it might have been before we actually went into record mode, but I'm going to bring it up since I brought it up about just the roles, you know, all the different roles. No, you did mention it in the question, but I know we talked about this previously as well. And all the different roles that are put on us or that we willingly put on ourselves. And so I really went big into the literal world. I wanted to master the literal world and became a business coach because I had cracked the code in my own way. And honestly, it felt like a miracle. It's like, oh my gosh, if this, you know, I was so intimidated. And for me to like crack the code on how to harness the internet and sales and marketing, I felt obligated to show other spiritual women, sensitive women, intuitive women, how to do it as well. What I didn't realize though, was that over the course of an 8-year career, really leading with business and not with spirituality, is that I felt more and more pressure to confine. I dyed my hair. I straightened my hair. I wore black suits. I really like started to, and I fell more and more away from some core parts of myself that led to me getting depleted and not being sustainable. And so it was a very loud knock at the door to return back to my essence. And also, I really am a big believer in cycles. You know, what was true and authentic, it's okay if it's not true and authentic anymore. And so it was a big letting go of a identity. But more so, it feels like it was that dream actualized and timed out. And so I am very, very grateful to be in a season where I do feel so integrated, you know, like there's just this like ease and integration. And it's not to minimize times where that's not the case, but yeah, that's just a little bit of the journey.
That's really beautiful and helpful. And you're speaking to something that our audience knows that I talk about is called rewilding, which is this place where we realize we've been domesticated in some way. I call it domestication. Like we learn to jump through the hoops and do all the right things and look all the right ways. And then at some point there might be a knock at the door. And so many of you who are watching this right now, your choice to watch something that's called Wild and Awake, I'm guessing comes from a part of you that also is feeling a calling for something more authentic, something to wake up. Mm-hmm. And so Sasha, for people who are watching this, who are realizing that their lives are maybe become domesticated, or they've gone into a way of working that was right at one point and is no longer so right any longer. What is your encouragement for them? Or what would you say from your own life path happens at this point? Because not everybody's able to leave their job or stop working or get rid of their kids or divorce their husband, or, you know, like all the pieces that we might choose as in our life to do to make a big change are not necessarily there as options. Do you have some thoughts on that? Because I know people listening right now are feeling resonance.
For sure. My daughters are 12 and 14, and I went through a divorce process, conscious uncoupling. I'm on the other side of that. And definitely I'm in the process of rewilding myself. I just love that, you know, your work, Kari, so much around this. And so, the domestication process is dynamic. It really is. And, I'd say the self-compassion piece, like you're really pointing to around, it's not always realistic to make big swooping changes. And so how to still find that sense of sovereignty and choice and empowerment and to live your best life, live our best life now, regardless of what's happening on the outside. It is possible. I know for myself, when I did feel at the height of being trapped by the life that I created, happened to me, whatever, you know, it was like, whoa, I felt so trapped. And so before I was able to access outer freedom and liberation, it really did, it did happen inside. And it was almost like magic. And people talk about this with manifestation all of the time, right? It's like, it's inside then outside. And that was definitely the case for me, was truly how to access my internal freedom inside of the life that I was in. And then everything on the outside really did begin to change fairly quickly over a year and a half period. So I'm a big believer in nature, really big believer in breath, you know, breathing. I used to hold my breath and I didn't know that. And it was, I went through an Ayurvedic practitioner certification program, a year long intensive back in 2011. And that was the big feedback, was like, you hold your breath a lot. I was like, I had no idea. It was life changing information. And so that really just like the curiosity around, yeah, where am I here in this body? And what are the types of situations or people or thoughts that then have me constrict and cause? So really breath, you know, breathing, being aware of breath. And then I walk barefoot almost all the time, you know, like walking, even, you know, if you don't have access to your own yard or land, you know, going to the park or the beach or wherever you can to really walk barefoot on the ground. And then I am a tree hugger. It embarrasses my children to no avail, but mom, you're such a hippie priestess. I was like, yeah. So, but yeah, hugging trees, feet on the ground. I grew up in a very urban environment. I was, am a fifth generation San Franciscan, so San Francisco, California. So I was, a lot of my early childhood anxiety, I found out later, was really just a disconnection from nature. And I naturally gravitated. I'd spend the summers in my grandparents' house, which was in the country. They had acreage and land, and, we'd spend hours walking, and just, you know, it was such a gift to be able to just see the contrast, and experience it and have that in my body. And so I really do believe that, yeah, inner freedom, which is easier said than done, really is emotional management, a lot of emotional management, and then also really breath and connection with nature.
I'm a tree hugger too, I admit to everybody here. Yeah. Walking barefoot and hugging trees and being in nature are some of the best ways of slowing things down so that there's the capacity to hear what is happening inside. That there is just so much noise and bombardment around us in society, yeah, right? Constantly, that I think has, you know, I'll often describe it as we've got many, many radios on at the same time. Like all of these radios are playing their song such that we've forgotten to even hear it. Mm-hmm. And to be able to get to a point where it's quiet enough to hear ourselves is huge, right? The quieting of all that noise.
And also, is this my noise? I can imagine, you know, that we have a lot of highly sensitive people here, and intuitive people, however you self-identify. I know for myself, and I'd, you know, venture to assume that with Kari, because I've gotten to experience so many of her spiritual gifts in person and virtually. And so a life-changing question for me is this mine? You know, is this my thought? Is this my feeling? Is this the collective's? Is this the person next to me in that car who looks really angry? Is this my child's? Is this a previous version of me? You know, like a lot of, so is this mine? And then I don't even realize that sometimes I have a group of girlfriends that, you know, we do a lot of work together. And when we gather in person, we just are doing all of our psychic gifts and spiritual gifts and different things. And I didn't even realize it. Like sometimes I'll just stand up and say, not mine. Or like, they just reflected back when we were integrating our week. I was like, I don't even remember saying that. It's just so automatic now. I'm like, oh, not mine. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. That's wonderful. I do something similar. It's like, you know, whose is this? Is this mine? It's not mine. Then let me release this. And it could be, you know, as you said, something that used to be mine, but it's no longer mine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm aware that there's, you're speaking of these women gathering together. So this sense of all of you getting together, do you find in creating circle like this with women that something really different is happening? And I know I'm posing that a little because I'm aware that the way that you gather women together is really different than women have been gathering historically in history, where we're backbiting or talking about each other or making up stories, or there's a hierarchy that might have been happening. I look through history, it may have been pockets of time throughout history where there's been really healthy women circles. Mm-hmm. And then there's been a big period of time, I believe, that we're moving out of, just starting to move out of, in which women are now starting again to be in healthy circles. Could you share a little bit about what that's like what the intention is behind that as you're meeting with your women friends? And also, I'll just say, I'm aware that you've created a group together called the Bee Sisterhood, in which B as in B-E-E, like the bees, in which the intention is actually to teach or to hold space for women to do this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I am a really big believer that when women gather with intention, healing happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is, I don't know a single woman who hasn't experienced a sister wound. You know, we talk a lot about mother wound. I know sister wound, there's less material. I do believe that that's the next frontier that's wanting to, you know, birth itself. And is, there are people talking about it. And I do believe this is so, so big. I watched a more documentary style movie with my boyfriend a couple of weeks ago around spirituality and the origin of spirituality. It's a pretty big one. And it ended the movie with a summary that I just thought was so simple, was that there are two consciousnesses that influence our relationship to spirit. One is rooted in scarcity and one is rooted in abundance. And it was just such a succinct way to describe it. I was like, oh yes, you know? And so the competition, the influence of scarcity when women gather versus the influence of abundance when women gather is just a very simple way of, you know, illuminating all the potentials that can happen from that. Mm-hmm. I do believe that even the painful parts that can emerge when women gather, it is an invitation for healing. So I had someone say, well, when women gather, healing happens. That's not true. I was like, or an invitation for healing, you know, like all of this.
Well, recognizing the woundedness so that healing actually has a place to happen, right? So we
exactly.
See it.
Right. So I've naturally had a very clean energetic around female friendships and women gathering. When I was 15 or 16, I started to host affirmation dinner parties for girls at my school. And I would create like just this beautiful environment and drape fabrics and, you know, cook the meals and bring everything out. Everyone was only allowed to speak in affirmations to each other. And
I love it.
Yeah. And so, and I remember, you know, my mom and dad, like years later, telling me about their experience of, you know, hiding on the stairs, overhearing this and just thinking like, wow, this is very unusual. You know, this is very different than, you know, and not to say I was awful to some people in high school as well, you know, my own wounding, my own fear, but this conflict in myself where I knew it was wrong when that part of me was expressing, and I knew that this is the pathway forward. This is definitely like, this feels good. This is creating a positive ripple effect, that upward spiral. So yeah, I do really see that. And then for Bee Sisterhood, yeah, this is a new company that three of my girlfriends and I have launched, and it really chose us. I love bees, you know, bees, but I was like, this definitely has been given to us to support sacred belonging and sovereignty, like how to really balance both, you know, like how to really be in personal sovereignty and be in that interconnectedness, and how to, you know, conflict resolution, honoring needs, and not locking people into one stage of life or these simultaneous paradoxical truths. And so it's really like taking everyone out of the box, like, and bringing a lot of curiosity.
Mm. Which is something, when I think of circles of women, typically we're coming with a lot of our guardedness or story or assumptions. And so this is a way of consciously holding it differently. I want to also say to this, people who are here, I've been in a women's group for, I guess I just did the math, 27 years. And the core group of us have still been in there for 27 years. Incredible group of women. We dance together. We meet regularly. And I've watched us growing and shifting. And if there's some of you women out there, hello, lovely, wow, women. We're all on a path for our commitment way back then was that we were on a path for personal growth. Mm-hmm. And that was really at the in the inside core of choosing to get together. And I think that that's some of what is shifting in some ways as we circle up as women is like the reason for getting together may be also shifting. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, yeah. Why will we be getting together? I've met with these women for the last 27 years, and I have changed immensely by being witnessed by them, being held accountable, by being seen, by being heard, by having my story have reflection. And often women on the outside of that would look in and say, wow, how are you women doing that? Because that's not my experience of being in a circle of women. Mm. So I really love that you're creating a conscious gathering in which women get to practice this. And I hope that many of you who are listening to this, you have a really healthy group of women friends, but I bet a lot of you who are listening to this are questioning, how do I do this with other women such that, I think you used the word about having your own, what was the word about your own,
sovereignty.
Sovereignty. Yeah. Your own sovereignty while having the group connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm very impressed. 27 years is a long time to gather with the same group of women. I'm sure you could write many books from the wisdom that you all have individually and as a collective. And you said something that I think is worth emphasizing around the shared intention that, and the shared values. And that definitely is, I think one of the big keys to finding our people is knowing who we are, what we want, and then really attracting and aligning with other people who agree. Like, yeah, that's important to me too. And having those shared agreements.
Yes. And in those agreements, maybe also the agreements that we don't talk about each other behind each other's backs, or we don't backbite, or we don't write. Those are also the social agreements that we get to unmake. And when I think of rewilding, we're unmaking some of those agreements of how we are with each other. It's not just women together. I think men as well, or humans together. That's part of what we do or have done historically and are starting to shift. I love it.
Yeah. Sasha,
as sort of to go into the individual, then I'm also really aware, and you and I have both seen this, that women who are being mothers and wives and having businesses or any variety of that, having a business, like balancing many, many different hats. And the idea that we have to do it all alone and the sense of our own, the lone wolf thing that was so huge in our making of America. And I think a lot of us women took on as we started our own businesses. Yeah. What do you see is happening around that? And what do you see as possible?
Absolutely. For sure. So, and just to circle back to the agreements, I'm a big believer. And for the Bee Sister, we have our Hive agreements. And one of them is around that, you know, that we don't talk behind each other's backs and all of that. So I agree with you wholeheartedly around really, formal agreements, you know, just like any relationship, honoring the relationship enough to have structure to allow for full freedom inside of the structure and to support with accountability and reflection and healthy, you know, conflict resolution, which in relationships and in communities and in the world, we sorely get to, in my opinion, get to improve on our conflict resolution so that there's nowhere we won't go with ourselves or other people without numbing or compartmentalizing or things like that. So, all right. So to, to that question though, that's a big one. I'm a student of history. I love history to support in predicting the future and also in understanding the present so that we have choice and can be really effective. And so, you know, if we look back just a little over 100 years ago, you know, my great grandmother was in the streets in San Francisco at the suffragette movement, or, you know, like, you know, yeah. Like it's not very, has not been very long that we are considered people by law. In other parts of the world right now, women do not have rights over their bodies. They have the same rights as chattel or considered chattel. Like this is, you know, it's very, if we look at history, modern history, it's really brand new. So just like women in power, women and money, women and right? Like all of these things. And so I do think there's themes, you know, so it's like the right to vote, basic rights over our body, you know, in the 70s, most states women needed a man's signature to get a credit card or to have certain medical procedures done. So, you know, the 70s women, you know, saying I have the same rights as a man to work, daycare centers came. So then we look at the internet and women in mass started to jump in like, oh my gosh, look at this brilliant opportunity, myself included. I can have both. I can honor my personal values to stay home with my children and develop a body of work and be financially independent. And so that was very exciting. And so many women jumped in. And what's happened over the last 10 years is burnout. So many people at first, it was like, oh my gosh, this amazing opportunity and a lot of hope and a lot of investment, personal development, professional development, a lot of money on the table, a lot of people jumping in. And so what's happened though, like I'd say from 2015, 16, 17, for sure, until COVID, there's a lot of disillusionment. You know, I would be at masterminds and sometimes women would be crying in the stall next to me. I feel like a fraud. All my credit cards are maxed out. I am not present with my children. There's just so much pressure and putting a lot of that pressure on self around why is this not working for me? Like it should be working or like other people. So if we really look at the statistics, only about 13% of women in business ever reach six figures. Yeah, there's a lot of pressure, I think self-imposed pressure, but also just the arc of the journey of the women's empowerment movement. That's just the wave that we're coming off of, which was a desire to prove I can do it. I can do this. And also mixed with, I think, a need for significance, which is very much a solo about the self stage of development. And the disillusionment that I've experienced talking to hundreds, if not thousands, of visionary, mission-driven women, whether they're pursuing business or not, if they're making a difference around the way, is a dissolving of a need to get the credit. And that's happened over about the last 3 years. So it's really just, I think there's a lot of patterns and trends that we can look at, and it's not making them right or wrong. I know for myself, like it was very meaningful to prove that I could do it on my own. That was really empowering until it wasn't, until it was not sustainable. And so I do think that collectively there's a shift around like, hey, let's innovate a new way. The ways that the options on this buffet table, none of them really look that good, or none of them that I thought looked good actually taste that good. So what else is available? And I think we're creating it in real time, how to pick together the best parts of all of the, you know, opportunities. And so I think it's going to be people like you and me and people watching right now that we innovate and we create sustainable models to allow for a well-lived life instead of the pursuit of a well-lived life.
Mm-hmm. But a distinction there too, right? The pursuing of something versus the living of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Which, you know, really brings me to the title of this event, which is The Wild and Awake, How to Live Your Best Life Right Now. And this is really, you know, part of my wanting you on this show, Sasha, is that I feel like you're a woman who's not only in your own life pursued living your best life right now, but also teaching other women through your business teaching and supporting your women to be entrepreneurs on their own, but also in the stage that you're in right now and the stage right now where you're looking at it differently. So I'm curious, in answering the question, how do you live your best? How does one, from your perspective, live their best life right now?
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a dynamic and personal conversation.
It's not a simple answer necessarily.
Yeah. You know, there's like, what's coming up is just like real radical truth-telling and self-honoring. Who am I today? What's important to me now? And not everything is about instant gratification. And I get that. But I do think that sometimes we can be there. Misguided loyalty can take us down pathways that we don't belong on anymore. And there's no way to overcome that. So really just that radical truth telling and checking in around like, am I on the best path for me now? Like, is this a timed out dream? is this where I'm really supposed to be? And if the answer is yes, then it's like, okay, settling in, like, okay, this is where I am now. Yes, this is the vision I have, and allowing the process to happen. And, but yeah, like I'm a big believer in, if we can't meet needs, we can validate needs. And really being around, making sure our circle of support really has that same philosophy, which is rooted in the work of Dr. Sue Johnson, you know, around needs-based relating. So for myself right now, I mentioned, you know, my divorce, it's been final a year, but the whole process has been about 3 years in the making, and we moved states, and I had some kind of wild stuff happen, like a business sort of stolen and real estate fraud and, you know, some big things like that just like can rattle, you know, that rattled me. And so, I really checked in with myself and was like, you know what do I really need most right now? And I really needed things to slow down. And I've been in a sacred pause. And so I made the choice to shut everything down and move myself and my 2 daughters in with my mom. So we're currently in my mom's house in Austin, Texas, and we are experiencing a multi-generational family lifestyle. And it's been really, really good and really challenging and all the things, like all the feels and all the things. But it's like when I really check in, and I've been dating, and like the seeds of, you know, the seeds for what I want have planted. I've planted them, but the step I'm at is just really about watering those seeds. It's not about like digging them up to make sure they're growing or wishing I was at this harvest season or, you know, so just this like deep radical acceptance of the step I'm at. So I'd say, you know, yeah, just making sure that we're really on the path that we're supposed to be on. And then once we are, like having that settling into this, what part of the cycle, the life cycle of this am I at? And then finding the joys, you know, the joy and the gratitude and the pleasure in that step. I have a friend who's a new mom to her second baby, and she's in her 40s, early 40s. And most of her friends are like, have kids my age or older. So she's like, you know, a while ago, she was kind of putting pressure, like, oh, I can't do the trips. I can't travel. I can't do that. You know, like kind of looking out like, oh, like, and then I remember the exact week it shifted where she completely surrendered into, oh, I'm in this stage. And it doesn't matter that these people are off doing this in this stage. Like she really embraced and claimed and allowed herself to settle into the pleasure of the season she's at. So there is that self-trust. And then like the permission to just give ourselves over to whatever is happening. And I really do think that that's one of the secrets to enjoying our best life now is like really being fully in, present to whatever is happening.
Such an interesting balance, isn't it? Right? This being fully in and present to what's happening, and then also being aware when something is a little bit off and recorrecting it. Mm. And it's that listening, right? Being fully, fully in, and also having the little antenna up that are saying, is this in integrity? Does this feel deeply right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. And a check-in for that I've used that I find really helpful is asking, is this necessary struggle or unnecessary suffering?
Mm.
Yeah. Because there's,
yeah,
you know, a well-lived life, there's a lot of, I'd presume, risk and growth and messiness and creativity, all silence, all of that. So it's like, okay, yeah, is this, you know, I think of the, you know, the metaphor of the butterfly, right? In the chrysalis, like struggling its way out. It's got to do that for the hormones to be released all the way to the tips for it to be able to fly. If someone comes and opens a chrysalis, the butterfly dies. So there is in life, in a perfectly divinely orchestrated life, struggle, but suffering really is that like red bell, that red, you know, warning bell kind of saying, wait, let's check in here. What's going on?
Suffering. And also, Sasha, what do you think about the being unconscious piece? Like, I see suffering, and then I also see many people are in a phase of being sort of shut down or numbed out, which doesn't necessarily feel like a chrysalis stage. It feels like a, domesticated in society and often quite numbed stage. Mm-hmm. How does that fit for you? And you see people evolving or what's possible for them. What does somebody do when the people who are listening to this right now who might be like, gosh, I don't feel like I'm in the chrysalis stage. I feel in the like, I'm just barely starting to wake up that there's something off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do, just for my own research, I do believe there are a lot of souls who have come here to be unconscious. And I've come into radical acceptance of that and not wishing for things to be other than they are, for people who don't have a desire for them to be other than they are. For those who are in an unconscious state, maybe out of just self-protection, who have a desire to experience something different, that's a different conversation. And for those people, just really connecting with vision and personal mission without, you know, I think of, you know, rockets in space. They're off course 90% of the time. They're only on course 10% of their mission. So if we don't know where we're going or what we're doing it for, then it's just aimless all of the time. And that's stressful. And so having a personal mission or a vision gives us a North Star to point to so that we can more consciously and intentionally course correct our way there. So I see personally a lot of people aimless because of overwhelming fear of, you know, fears of just so much change, so much uncertainty. Even very strong people in the past who I've seen as leaders really having conviction. It's been humbling to the ego for many of us to question things we thought were just what they are. And so just that self-compassion, but also like, okay, can we get that personal fire stoked again? And then how can we fan the flames of that and then connect into a personal mission and a vision that really can help then all the systems to feel safer to shift out of that numb state or unconscious place into re-engaging with life and engaging in life as if it's happening for us and it's safe and it's safe to risk and it's safe to lean into the new and the unknown and to create again and to be born anew. And, you know, but I think there's a lot of fear in the unconsciousness. So, yeah.
When you're speaking that right now, I have a visual of what you call the heroine's journey, the spiral. And so for people who are hearing us right now, actually, you won't be able to see the words, but I'll just hold up the one in my little notebook. This is,
yeah.
And the power of that in what you're speaking right now, I'm recognizing, well, first of all, I'll say that the spiral makes me, you know, the heroine's journey. If we think of the hero's journey and we think of, it's really like, you know, how do we own this as ours? And one of the stages I really love in the very beginning, you know, we're receiving the call. And the second stage is the resistance to the call. Mm. Right. It's like, oh, right. It's not always clear that that's the next thing to happen.
Yeah.
No, here's the call. It's the resistance to the call. And I'll just, because this has been such a powerful, cycle in my own work. And I love that you've articulated this way done some work with Dante's Inferno, which has a similar layout in its own way. And there's a number of different, you know, archetypes like this that people may recognize as we're speaking right now. So I just want to name that is helpful in your own mind to see where it is, that there's receiving the call, the resistance to the call, the meeting the mentor, a decisive action. I'm going to skip a few of these in here, but there's the beginning of difficulties. There's facing the shadow self, new insights and awarenesses, seeing tangible results, resistance to the work. I love that that's in one of the stages, right? And that the resistance to the work doesn't necessarily mean it's the wrong work. It's like, oh, I'm resisting this. Surrendering to the surface, to the service of your vision. Right? That's really far along in the cycle of the work, and returning with wisdom. And we can keep on going. But I want to just name some of these steps that you've, you know, laid out that I look at regularly and really admire. I admire the breaking down of them in terms of being super tangible. And I'm curious, when you created the Heroine's Journey, like how did that come as a template for you? Because it's in many ways what we're talking about today, but it's, I know it's framed out through business in a way, but this is a life journey of a woman.
Yeah.
Or human.
For sure. So we have, you know, Joseph Campbell with the Hero's Journey. I believe he's like the big right person with that. And then we have Maureen Murdoch with the Heroine's Journey. And so it's like the more extreme masculine, extreme feminine, how we interpret them. And so for Maureen Murdoch, she said that the Heroine's Journey was one of an internal transformation. And the Hero's Journey is one of external. As a modern woman pursuing, like, doing the inner and the outer, I was like, oh, we got to merge these two because it's not just the inside, you know, it really is both. And so it was a helpful tool for me to be able to self-identify where am I in my own life cycle of transformation. And then it just became so, you know, clients and community just ended up loving it. And so, and it really does help for just a feedback tool, like, oh, this is where I'm at, being able to self-identify. And it's just more information than to make strategic decisions, because what, you know, what is most important, what is the most acute need at every step of the journey is very distinctly different and will inform choice making. And so I love that you said resistance to the work, right? It's like the resistance to the work is when someone's already created results in their business. Let's just say six figures. That used to be where I would really support women in having that breakthrough. And so, and then there was this impulse to kind of dismantle everything that worked. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. And it's because of the resistance to the work. It's there because what the driver was to get them to that place has now been accomplished. And so very similar to Olympic athletes before, you know, years go into supporting these athletes by their coach to get ready for game day. High level coaches right before the big game or the big performance, sit the athlete down and have them set their next big goal, because they understand the power of this, right? Of self-motivation, self-determination, and to not let someone who's a high performer go aimless for any period of time. So it's like putting in all that work and regardless of what happens, this is what I'm going to go for next. Very similar, I see with entrepreneurs or mission-driven, you know, women and visionaries is kind of this feeling almost like it's their Mount Everest, and they can, sometimes we can't even imagine that we will be on the, we will have done it, but at some point with a proven plan and support and self-motivation, yes, they will. So the resistance to the work is, it signifies it's time to go deeper into the heart of the mission, the heart of like, what am I really, what's next for me? And it could be to keep doing what they're doing, or it could be, you know what? No, I'm ready for something else. And then the next, and that it's a very revealing step.
And could you also speak a little into the surrendering to the service of your vision? Because I see a lot of women at that stage where their vision is something that they've been putting out into the world. And what does that mean to you to surrender to the service of the vision?
So that's really legacy. We're talking about legacy at that point. And so those steps are very revealing, because for many people, myself included in certain businesses, is after a while, it was like, ooh, there isn't authentically a big enough vision to surrender to for me to justify what it takes for me. All of the ins and outs, the to-do lists. And so, Matt, you know, really alignment. And that's part of why I've gone back to a spirituality focused work, you know, is because that's the vision I can surrender to. It's effortless to be in service of empowerment, the empowerment of individuals, and the vision I have, the possibility is so, it's endlessly motivating. Not to say every day I'll be, you know, showing up working towards it, but that's really what it is. Surrendering to the service of the vision is really, we're talking legacy. We're talking real, you know, and everyone's surrendering to the service. Can you say it again, the exact way it's written there?
Yes. Surrendering to service of your vision.
Yes. So that is, you know, I see, that's not, I mean, honestly, I think non-entrepreneurs model this better because there isn't so much self-interest. And not to say entrepreneurs, when we make more money, we give more money away. Like there's so many benefits to it, but you know, I have, I'm thinking of people who really like show up with so much love and reverence and right. We all have those people. Those are people who are walking examples of like their life is their legacy. They're all in their life. So,
yeah. And I just love also in the idea that, in surrendering to service of your vision, that your vision is actually something bigger, right? And this is part of, you know, whether it's our vision or our calling or our relationship to spirit, right? That there's actually something bigger that gets to hold us on this journey. And when I think about rewilding or think about one of the places in the arc or the spiral that I take people through is we get to a point where we recognize that this I is not so separate. It's actually connected. And there's a connection to something bigger. And so we become, you know, part of something larger that in this, in your model would be a vision, right? But it's also like the vision is how it impacts the planet, how it impacts our society, our relationships with others, that we're actually part of that working mechanism in service, but also of service.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sasha, I want to just notice, I'm sure everybody's been admiring your little hearts on the wall over there. And I know that some of the part of how you map out or create inspiration for you is you have things around for yourself to look at that are visions that you lead you forward. And I know in this last year, you've just recently had one of your visions has come into being, which is this beautiful podcast. Would you be willing to share a little bit about it and what I'd love for people to hear as they're listening to Sasha, because I think your podcast is amazing, but also that there's the inspiration of hearing somebody who creates something because it's a vision, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So the podcast, my podcast, Exploring All That Is Sacred, actually, it launches today when this recording is happening. So this says, you know, February 22nd, 2023, this has been up for a long time. So I know you're watching this, it's now past the date, but it's a very sacred day. For me, I've had the vision of this podcast for many years, and like so many visions, right? It's like we get the call and then the resistance of the call and then timing and all of the things. And so, yeah, the Exploring All That Is Sacred podcast I'm so honored to get to, you know, just pour into this work. It's interesting. I found this card in my car yesterday. I was cleaning my car out and it's from a friend, because when you have vision, I recommend sharing it. You know, like just being unabashed around like a kid, like, I want to do this, or this is what, you know. And so she had sent me this card over a year ago. And she said, "Hey, love, sending you juicy vibes as you envision into the next evolution of your work and launch your podcast. XOXO. Can't wait to see you soon." And so it was so sweet to see that yesterday, you know. And so just, you know, as you're visioning into, you know, your best life, just I just encourage you watching this to like to just to share about it, to share, you know, to be open, just to allow yourself the imaginal space for as long as is needed, because eventually, if it is meant to create itself, it will actualize. And so it's just such a beautiful creative process, life, right? Just living in general.
And I think so often when we have a vision, we get secret about it. It's like, I'm not going to show or share with people. You know, I'm an artist, so I might be working on a really big piece, and it's like, I don't let somebody see it until it's, you know, further along or complete or museum worthy. And I hear people all the time talk. I work with a lot of creatives who are making projects in the world, and they're secretive about that. And I love what you're saying here. It's like allowing it to be seen. This is part again about how we hold space for each other, how we can, whether it's in your sisterhood circle or whether it's, you know, in your family or your friends, it's like, can we speak each other can we remind each other of our dreams? Can we hold the space for each other?
It's so wild you say this too, because I'm remembering, I think it comes down to the scarcity versus abundance. Like, are we coming from scarcity or abundance? And it's not to say, yes, will people steal ideas? Will this happen? Things happen. Yes. But it's like, so it's not to minimize that. And it is interesting. The very first coaching call I ever had as a brand new empowerment coach, the very first call, I remember it so vividly. The young woman wanted nothing more than to be empowered. She didn't have a single quality relationship in her life, not with parents, not with siblings, not with women, not with a man. And she desperately wanted to be empowered. I just want to be an empowered woman. And then she said, I said, okay, well, what's your vision? She said, I'm afraid to tell you because you're going to steal it. So anyway, just something about what you just shared there. It's like the extreme poles of that. And, not judging it, but like, is this working for me? Is this belief or this pattern or this way of being supporting the life that I actually want? Or is it like, can I Yeah. Have more abundant relationship to the process.
Yeah. And allow the process to be something people see us. And I think part of living our best life right now is letting other people see that our best life is happening. And that also that it's growing, or that we have dreams that we're reaching into, that it's actually, it's something we share. It's part of the conversation. It inspires somebody else. It makes somebody, you know, come in a little closer and say, I didn't know it was on your heart to make a, you know, podcast that was about spirituality. Wow. That's amazing. That's so beautiful. What made that happen? Right. Mm-hmm. We get to ask those questions of each other.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Sasha, one of the areas that I know that you're working with as you're talking on these podcasts is really around consciousness and our evolving. And this is, you know, this is a area that I love. It's very near and dear to my heart. And I look at our planet right now as we're shifting and changing, and maybe not always as fast as I want us to shift and change on this planet. But when we look at our consciousness of this planet, like what role, or do you see us as individuals connected to the growth of our planet, or the shifting of the consciousness of the planet? Like, does my own personal work make a difference somewhere else? Does yours, like, are we individuated? And I think the answer is partly in the question, but I'd love to hear your take on how it makes a difference when we're brave enough to do our inner work.
Oh yeah. Well, 100% yes. Yes. 100% yes. And, I know for myself, there's been times where my personal development feels self-indulgent, you know? And so I think there's different stages of everything, and sacred selfishness is a really important foundational thing to have. Like, yes, when I do my work, when I meet my needs, when I allow myself to enjoy whatever it is I want to enjoy, it doesn't always have to be intense. Sometimes it looks like, you know, right, doing just frivolous things, right? But like I'm thinking, you know, looking at like shifting patterns, you know, so all of us come from different family lines. And like, you know, for me, it was like the martyr, you know, so really learning how to just enjoy my life was actually a radical revolutionary act and choice that opens up new possibility for my children. And there, if they choose to have children or people I see, as simple as the fact that I have embraced my natural curly hair. I was at Neiman Marcus with my boyfriend a few days ago and we were having so much fun. I wanted to show him like my favorite place. I was like, okay, this is one of my favorite places. We come in through the shoe department and then we go up the escalators with the hanging butterflies. And then we go to this part of the dress department, then this part of the dress department, just trying on these dresses and just, you know, being in the joy of that. And the woman who was helping me commented on my curly hair and I didn't think anything of it. Anyway, Joelle called me earlier today and said, you know, I was at this smoothie place, ran into the woman who was helping us at Neiman Marcus, and she talked about your curly hair and how by experiencing you embracing your curly hair, because she has curly hair, but straightens it and dyes it. You know, so this is just a simple example of we often don't know the impact we have by being authentic. So in the framework of, right, your best life, like that alive, awake, present, true version of yourself activates other people in completely unknown to us ways. And so that to me is really exciting because we can, like doing our own work and, you know, being committed to living our best life. It's an invitation. We're bright lights illuminating other people's pathways, including enjoying our own, you know, our own journey.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Sasha, thank you so much for your wisdom and your playfulness and your brightness on this show today. It's just been wonderful to have you taking us into the reality of your life. And I love just the full expression and disclosure of your life as an example that we can look at where you've been playing out this unfolding. And my hope for all of you who are watching this today, that there's, as with all of the speakers, that Sasha gets to be an example of someone who's in the messiness and the beauty and the power of life and doing it in as much consciousness as possible. Mm-hmm. And that we get to play with this, right? This is a stage in our life. We're not here for very long. This is a short little passage here on this earth. What do we get to do with our time here? How do we want to play with it? How do we be as most authentic as we can so that this experience is as authentic as it can be? Yeah. Sasha, thank you. And I'm really loving your gift offering. So would you mind sharing with folks what you are gifting to them, because it's so in absolutely perfect for where our conversation went today.
Yeah, absolutely. And first, just thank you so much, Kari, for your authenticity, for your bright light. You're a unique, unique, powerful woman. And it truly, like, getting to experience you, we got to spend some time in person together a few months ago, and it was like activation codes. I was like, what's going on? You're like, it's me. I was like, okay, I'm tuning in. Like, you know, that's a summary of it. It was just like, wow, it's so, I really honor you and your leadership and the work you're here, you know, sharing with people and the invitation. I think it's needed now more than ever, you know, to embrace the wildness, right? Just the permission that we have that. We have access to that. So thank you. So much. So my free gift is really in service of, if you're here and you're called, you're like, it's my time to lead in a way that feels authentic and accessible. So I really do believe that when women gather, healing happens. And so I have a free gift all around how to create sacred and intentional gatherings for women. So if you're called to lead a retreat or have a women's circle, whether it's free or paid, it will, you know, guide you through how to go from the idea phase all the way to getting ready to actually birth that into the world.
That's just incredibly generous and incredibly helpful and functional for people. So please, everyone here, if that resonates for you, or think it's going to resonate for you in 5 years. Like, again, here we are talking about the cycles. If it sparks that little light and yet you think somewhere along the way, it's going to feel calling to you, please grab that gift. for everyone who's here, I also want to thank all of you for being here, because I know it takes the time out of your day and your and in your life. And my hope with these conversations that your mind is sparked, that your ideas, you know, you're able to look at the world a little bit differently. And some of what we bring up might push edges of ideas. It might be like, I've never thought of that, or that feels uncomfortable. And I want you to know that that's part of what the show is about. We're actually about expanding our consciousness is not always comfortable. And all of the speakers, including, you know, Sasha and I, are sitting here as explorers in this life. Like, how do we think differently? How do we open this box bigger? So my invitation to all of you is to take what you got from today's conversation, bring it into your own life, own what parts of it feel like yours, and allow it to make the transformation that you're ready for. Thank you all for being here. And thank you, Sasha. Aloha, everyone. Aloha.